HubZero.org, a platform for scientific collaboration.
Well, thanks, Rudy. Well, so I am a curator, and I knew there's going to be a bunch of librarians before me talking about OAIS, so I chose not to use that reference model, and I will also try to refrain from acronyms and standards. John sort of mentioned that we got it all right. No, we already figured it out. We are using the model everyone else uses, and no, it's actually not that way. There's a lot of effort we have to put in so that the people would actually somehow make sense of our data model and store the data the way we need. And actually, curator is sort of like in between. I try to help researchers upload the data the way it's meaningful, but also I am the one who has to interpret to them what the system is capable of or what limitation it has. So I'm always in between and nobody seems to be happy with me. So one acronym is DCC, which is not particularly relevant in this context. But it's British, so you can see visualization or conceptualize misspelled. So this is creation lifecycle. And I like this reference model a lot because it sort of like puts the whole lifecycle of data and the workings of repositories together in some kind of one very colorful whole. I color-coded one of the individual steps, but you see, it's sort of concentric. If you look close enough, you will actually make up the individual steps in those circles. The red ones are actually the ones when I think the research team and researchers is particularly important, and the responsibility areas, which are in blue, are the ones where the responsibility is key. This is not black and white picture, because the repository also produces a lot of metadata, so that the repository could manage and preserve the content of the data of the research team. So sometimes for the description, representation, information, both partners have to take part in. This is how we ideally imagine that the whole life cycle takes place. You do test, you collect the data, you can visualize them, then they are being stored, presented, delivered, accessed in Project Warehouse, which is the public manifestation of our repository. And I am going to talk mostly about how we make sure that what you see is of high quality, that you see what you are supposed to see, and you get what you want to get. So, the librarians again mentioned a lot of goals, standards, policies. Well, I will also align our goals, at least, with the data management plan requirements of NSF. NISCOM, which is the organization which runs NISHub, data goals are aligned with those requirements. It makes it easier for us to show the researchers who do look for those five categories what they need to do, that we are thinking about the same thing and we have capacities and devices which do help us to provide what they need. So all research data documentation will be archived. They can upload it to Project Warehouse. It will be of high quality. They will be accessible and shareable. The content will be reusable. And our data will be preserved. Archived data will be preserved. That means that it's not only stored, but we will make sure that the content of the data is accessible in some kind of for the future. So now the five W's. Who is participating in the archiving? So it's a research team, site personnel, in those 14 labs, which do altogether comprise the network for earthquake engineering simulation. So these 14 labs do collaborate with us. That's where the researchers do conduct their studies and research. And their personnel also participates in this archiving enterprise. Curator and the curation team is another party in this process, and the whole NISCOM by maintaining and developing the whole NISCOM, NISHub infrastructure. What's collected? Sensor measurements, calibrations, analysis, reports, numerical simulations. Basically, whatever the researchers do produce, and it's meaningful. When? The question when has actually two aspects. When do you upload it, and for how long? So, given our policies, the research team should upload, as we are focusing on documenting the whole workflow, the whole life cycle of the project. So within months, unprocessed data from the sensor measurements are being collected. 6 months later, we hope that the documentation and metadata for those tests will be uploaded. And 12 months after an experiment is done, the data should be published. Typically, the research projects in NISHAP are long-term. So we are collecting the data really on several different moments of that individual project. So this is not really one shop when they upload all the data, we will create it, they will sign some releases, and that's it. This is process. Warehouse. This is easy. It's project warehouse where all the data should be uploaded. And why? There is a bunch of reasons. Some of them were already mentioned. I would mention just the ease of a knowledge transfer to the community and within the research team itself. Authenticity and integrity of the data. I think this is really important. Once it's uploaded in the repository, we actually do create conditions that the data are not touched, tampered with. We can guarantee nobody did access it. And there's a couple of other reasons you can think of them. So what kind of data we do have? Well, the data are very diverse. Partly because there are many research teams participating in different labs. They do share facilities, but not practices. They are from different universities. Many of the teams are mixed with research teams coming from different labs, different universities. They have different methodologies and approaches. The research domain is important. We do cover basically five quite distinct communities: tsunami research, material engineering, geophysical, geotech, and structure engineering. The type of data, the library literature often mentions these three types: experimental, observational, and computational. We do have all of them. So you can imagine those challenges we are facing with that. And yes, as if it weren't complex enough, the complexity is increasing due to many factors. The number of sensors, computation being one of or two of those. So where the data are coming from? This is example of one of the labs. So if you do it, you're lucky enough, the research lab, IT team will upload the data for you. But sometimes you're on a node, you have your own data acquisition system, and you have to upload the data yourself. Or you can upload it just from a computer, or sometimes research teams get just a thumb drive. Well, and all this data will eventually end up in Project Warehouse, and we have three different methods how the data can be uploaded. Each of those methods serves different purpose. So now finally, the quality assurance comes in place. There are two major foci of quality assurance: content and the technical area. The one is really dependent on the human input, and the human monitoring is also very important in this one. The technical one is much more machine actionable, and we can use tools, software to help us with it. Two areas of that: content, quality assurance, metadata, and completeness. When it comes to technical aspects, we do focus on formats and file integrity. And Neil already spoke about that, so I don't have to go into any further details. When it comes to completeness, there are also two aspects to that, two dimensions. One is timeline, when and what should be uploaded. And on the level of research hierarchy, this is also true. Experiment, run, trial, those are the hierarchies we subdivide the researchers' workflow into. They all have different requirements. So understandable data. What we want to see is that researchers can create a relationship between instrumentation plan, sensor metadata, and then the data. So for that reason, the metadata need to be meaningful, purposeful, accurate, predictable, and standardized. NIST doesn't have one standard. So we try to accommodate all those different communities, all those researchers. The standard is very informal, if you wish. There is a one. However, it's quite flexible. And we need to keep the standard very flexible. So when it comes to content metadata, we use a couple of devices which do help us to keep the data consistent and so that we can manage them more easily, that the users can also input the data more easily. Because, yes, to get the data in high quality, no, metadata in high quality, is of an issue. So we are using autocomplete, checkboxes, system-generated folders or tab. It depends on which tool you are using for upload. We are using templates and forms. So autocomplete, this is quite easy and basically no-brainer. But not every application does allow for that. Not every collection of data does allow for autocomplete. We are lucky we can take advantage of it, that the research person name is going to be can be sought out. It can be preferred. It can be auto-completed. Organization facility, the same. Equipment is context sensitive. So only if once you choose a facility, the equipment linked or used at that facility is going to be displayed and you can just use a checkbox. These are some of the folders. They do help us to control proper position on the file system, but they also do provide some metadata. As you can see, specimens, sensors, drawings, data, photos, documentation. It helps us also to impose some file format constraints. For drawings, for instance, we do want image MIME types. PDF is not necessarily useful in this sense, because you cannot really do good visualization with PDF always. Well, you can, but. Templates, these are hard. Every research team is using some sensors, but it's difficult to get one template for all of them. So we have one very basic one. It's definitely bigger than this, but this is just an example of what properties this template has. And here, this is just a slide about completeness. I won't go into much detail. I mentioned it. This is just to make sure that it's understood that different people participating in the archiving issue, no, curation and archiving and events, no, actions, do operate in their own environment. They do have to comply with the standards, licenses, guidelines. Here again, I did mention the NIST Community Archiving milestones, the dates they have to be observed. And one way how we try to help them is here. This Ready for Curation Progress, we call it Curation Dashboard. And this basically should indicate to research teams when they upload into certain folder or tab or certain type of material we are after. Once it's green, it means that they did upload it what they were supposed to. If it's red, they are still missing something. We do, however, come and check if what they uploaded really does satisfy some of those requirements we have. And if it doesn't, then it's yellow. They will come and hopefully improve the documentation. If it doesn't apply, it's gray. I think it's quite intuitive. So now, have a big figure. So now we come to technical quality. Format identification is one of them. We are using FITS in a NIST hub, which actually uses FATR, another like six identifying tools. So if you look at all objects with a JPEG extension, for instance, so these 10 or 11 different file format names actually do show up in our repository. We do stretch some 8 years, maybe some of the data. And, you know, some of them do cause some concerns, and we'll get to that later. Sometimes do people upload files without any file extension? So the format identification does help you to identify some of them, like this one. What is it? Well, you know, it's open document because I bet JHOF or Exif2 did tell us. The other aspect is a format validation. There is one tool which does do that for us. So look at the JPEG. In all those almost 500,000 of files, there is one file which is identifies JPEG. So what does that mean? Well, it means that, well, it's recognized, it's well formed, which is great, but it's not valid. This means that for us, we don't know what it is, that the file doesn't have to work next week, next month. So we probably will forward migrate it into something which is well-formed and valid. And the last is file integrity. We are using MD5 hashtags in two different tables. We do compare them. And as we do monitor the files, always checksum, premise checksum, you see one of those preservation metadata formats, premise. So that looks pretty good. Checksum also can tell you that they are files with different names, titles, and they have the same checksum. What does that mean? Is that the research team just tried to make it easy for themselves, uploaded the same file under two different file names. It may be legitimate, it may be not. It's still interesting. And so these are the two files. So, curation. It can be passed through a swamp. The harder you try to get out, the deeper you sink. It can be swamp for both of us, for the researchers on one end, or for the research teams. For the curator doesn't always know what they are actually getting into, even if the project looks okay. Suddenly you get in and you see some file formats which will be very difficult to preserve. For the researchers, that's the same. They will upload everything they have. All those CAD files, PDFs, whatever. And we will come and we'll say, well, PDF is not a good drawing. Please give us PNGs, give us JPEG. However, if you do what you are supposed to do, you do follow the guidelines, you do interact with curator, curation is path to swamp. Straightforward way to authorship, merit, and publication. Not only that you will actually have impact with your data being publicly available, reusable, for grab for users, you also get a DOI for the set. And this is hopefully something which we hope will make researchers, especially those in the early in their careers, to use and be, let's say, more forthcoming when it comes to archiving their research data. These are for the credits, and thank you, comments, questions.
Great. Thanks.